Let's take ever a star and match ever a star with big sturgeon. We know that fairgrounds is a slower track compared to Oaklawn Park. Big sturgeon ran a 91 speed index. Ever a star, best that has ever run is an 89 at Oaklawn, which is the best. These are the true contenders. All right. Now, this is what I call a pace race. This means that early pace is going to be established in this race. I know who's going to take the lead. I know how the race is going to be run. And now I've got to project times using the matchup. I'm going to project the times that I feel that this race is going to be run in. Now, what I call a paceless race is a race where you don't know who's going to take the lead. Now, if you read in a number of Dr. Sarton's manuals, you'll find that it's very, very predictive, a horse race. Their behavioral pattern is real predictive. Look at the fly kite. You know, this horse likes to have the lead. You know, all you have to do is look at the ones and the twos, the position that he is in, these positions that this horse is in. All right, look at Rivetus, same way. Both of these horses like to have the lead. These other horses are come off the pace horses, sustained pace horses. Now, I know by looking at this race that the mile race at Oaklawn Park is usually won early energy. Because two winners in there have gone wire to wire. Sir Bubby is 2.5 lengths off at the second call. So, you know, I know what is winning at the track. Seventh race, I already know what's winning because I've set through six races. All right. Now I look and see what is going to be the first call in this race. Now remember, this is a mile, so I've got to look at a half mile. Rivetus. Rivetus, 46-2. This is what they're facing today. See, I saw this as I'm going matching these other horses up. I know what they're facing today. They're facing a 46-2. All right. In looking at Big Sturgeon, I come down and look at Big Sturgeon at the mile 70 race at Louisiana Downs. And I see at a 46-1, he's 6.5 lengths off. At the second call of a 111-4, he's 3 lengths off. So, you know, I could give the horse 4 lengths and he can't keep up with Rivetus. Big Sturgeon out. Okay, now I kept Sir Bubby, and I look at Sir Bubby. At a 46-2, he's 4 off. Now these wouldn't be the pace lines that you would use. These are ones that I'm matching. If what can this horse do if he's facing this 46-2, 110-1 today? All right. At a 46-2, he's 4 off. At a 110.4, he's 2.5 off. And look at the final time, a 136.1, which is exactly the same as Rivetus. Now, here is the catcher. At a 46.2, Sir Bubby will still be 4 back. At a 110.4, he's facing a 110.1. He's going to be now 9.5 lengths off at the second call. He's losing ground. Sir Bubby is going to lose ground. If he's 9 off and he can close off a 2.5 and win at a 136.1, can he run a 136.1 today? No way. Sir Bubby, out. See, all I did is take what he has to run early today to keep up with Rivetus and add it to his final time. Okay. Now I go to mastery. You know, way down at Hollywood Park in June, he faced a 45.2 or 110 on a one-turn mile, which was the best the horse ever ran. So I'm going to come up to the Louisiana Downs race and the Oak Park race. And I can see that this horse, since he ran at Hollywood Park, has deteriorated. He shows very little. You know, at Louisiana Downs, he ran a 112.2. At Oakland, he ran a one length off of a 111.2. He's facing a 110.1 today. Can this horse win today? No. Throw him out. Faking the Blues, we've already thrown out. Ever a Star, we've thrown out. A Bit of Irish, we've thrown out. Now let's look at Fly Kite. Fly Kite. A 47.2, he can go wire to wire. What's he facing today? 46.2. How far is he going to be off? 5 lengths. All right. A 110.3. If he's off 5 lengths at a 46.2, how far is he off at a 110.2? I mean, pardon me, a 110.1. One more. That's a total of 6 lengths. Now, if you'll notice, he has a better final time at a 135.4 than Rivetus. Now remember, he's forced to run faster earlier by 6 lengths, right? Is this 6 lengths going to cost this horse any reserved energy he may have? You betcha, because he has to run faster. All right? Then if you add that 6 lengths to his final time, what do you have? 137 flat. Can he outrun Rivetus? So I got one horse.
What was Rivetus' second call? I've got everything down here right except Rivetus.
110.1.
Oh, gosh.
Now.
There you go, 110.125 is the one that is.
Now here, this explains to you, or shows you why, that speed handicapping doesn't win. They made Fly Kite the favorite. All I'm left with in the race, really, are Rivetus and Sir Bubby. And I didn't worry about Sir Bubby, and besides, Sir Bubby he threw his rider. And he was the second favorite. And he was the second favorite.
He got and finished third, though. writer.
But they really cussed him as Pat Day, Howard.
He ran by himself on track and right steering.
Now, like I say, this is a rather easy race. I did it quicker than it takes me to tell about it. And I told
him. Everything is quicker than it takes you to tell about it.
And it takes me longer to tell about it than it does to write about it. So, but that is, I did this particular race for the very reason that it is a good example of how to learn the matchup. And I do this on every race, regardless of whether I feel that early pace is going to predominate or whether it isn't. If you read the follow-up, you know, you can get rid of, if you read the article that I did on in the first follow-up, you can get rid of these sprinters by using the speed rating. You can find out these sprinters can't keep up.
Consider weight up or down at all?
God knows. I don't even consider jockeys. You know, I just feel it. No, I don't even look at that. I don't have time. I do not worry about post position.
Tell them Huey's story when you get
it. I do not worry about jockeys. I do not worry about trainers. I worry about nothing. Now, I don't even worry about how long the horse has been laid off when I am doing my preliminary matchup. But I never worry about jockey, trainer, weight on or off. Never.
I'm still a little confused about how to reconcile the sprinters with in this case, with the route, because it seems to me that Everett Starr in the second race back is right there. Is there some adjustment you're making in your mind for
Everett Starr, I look at it. Everett Starr, you know, that's the best race that horse ever ran. You know, where in his past performance has he ever run better? And in looking at this, it shows that he is closing. He has sustained pace only. Only way that he could possibly win the race, even as a sprinter, is if it is really sustained. The mile race is running percentage early, is dominating the mile at that particular time. Look at Fly Kite and look at Rivetus. So the 110-1 is the best the horse ever ran. I know that this is at a 110-1 is at the second call. At a 45-2, he's off four lengths. Now remember, this is a sprint. This is a sprint. So I just reversed the procedure that you do on a route. I say, okay, he runs a 110-3 at the second call, giving him 2/5 of a second. At 110-3, he's two lengths off of Rivetus. Same thing at the at the second call, even if I used that particular race. But you know, I've got 7 or 8 other races to look at. And I see that the horse normally runs, even at Exarbin, a real fast track, a 111-2, a 111. He gets beat at a 110-2. He wins at a 112. So, you know, this horse is not that good of a sprinter. I match him up with Big Sturgeon, and I really think Big Sturgeon is a little bit better than Everett Starr.
I'm trying to make here that this sprinter is going to have to run his best sprint to be within 2 lengths of this horse at the second call.
Yeah, his best ever.
What's he going to have left? He has to run his best race just to stay within 2 lengths. If this horse is a router, he's going to finish up the next 2 furlongs. He has nothing left to go the other 2 furlongs. If he runs his best sprint, he's all done.
In a manner of speaking, what you're doing is what the computer does, only you're doing it
Sure.
He's running contender scan through his mind ahead of time to weed out the deadwood.
Pat scan, we call it.
What did this horse pay?
I don't remember. I really don't.
I don't even have charts.
He's $7.
He paid about $8
something. Did he pay that? Yeah. Because normally, do you bet horses? I mean, the sprinters against trotters? If sprinters.
Yeah, I'll bet anything I think can win. I don't care whether it's a sprinter going against a router going against a sprinter. If I think they're going to win the race, I'm bound.
I heard someone ask Dick which race does he play. Howard said, he and I play anything got four legs. If we can determine who's going to win the race, we bet them.
Once in a while, we even bet them when we can't determine.
You've got to remember something that Jimmy said. Don't lose sight of what he said. He said he started off keeping charts. He started off putting everything to the computer. He started off doing all the things we tell you to do. This is why we provide programs like Contender Scan, which Jimmy was very instrumental in developing computer-wise. He developed Contender Scan because...
Several years ago, I said, wouldn't it be great if we had a program that gave you the composite best fraction? So you can see the absolute optimum that every horse will run against today. So we call that... Dream race of Penn's Contender Scan. What he's telling you is that after you put them through computers, after you've kept profiles, after you've kept models, after you've done all these things, you then get the insight. So whenever you hear one of our guys say, well, in my style of play, as Brohammer says, or with me, I don't do it, as Bradshaw says, remember, they went through the rigors of every aspect before they developed this intuition. Jimmy
Quinn, in his book on high-tech handicapping in the information age, has said that what intuition is really is a combination of experience and knowledge applied properly to a given circumstance. So intuition is developed by doing it over and over, as he did thousands of races on a Timex with a Big 20 program. Then he developed the intuition.
Now let's put it all together with your work, combined by Dick Schmidt's work and Tom Brohammer and Bob Purdy when he's fixing a program for somebody. But he'll be chiming in on these three races, which Dick will supervise you in with Tom Brohammer at his shoulder.
I do feel that there is a tendency when you're doing work like this, or working backwards on races that you already know the outcome of, to really kind of fool yourself. I used to do a lot of testing of systems, and I finally realized that one of the reasons why I could make them work at home on paper and not at the racetrack was because I simply wasn't being very truthful with myself at home. And I finally got real rigorous, and I had my wife look at the results charts and read the scratches to me, so I just wouldn't even get a flash of the winner or anything. And that's the only way to do it. I try to put my hand over the results charts and go down and get the, and I look over here and I say, oh, there's the horse that won the eighth race. And I look between my fingers. I couldn't stop myself. It was just pitiful. I was so pathetic. Because it's just, so my, when Huey Moll talked about cutting out things and putting them over pieces of the race, it just snapped right to me, because I've done exactly the same thing. And I think you have to be very, very rigorous. If you know the outcome of a race, it is impossible to handicap that race with intellectual honesty. At least it is for me. Maybe someone else can. But you'll just cheat on the pace lines. The winners, the pace line will loom up, as Howard said, because you're looking at the winner and say, where's the best pace line for this horse? And you'll think you're doing it honestly. You can cheat yourself like that for years and never realize it. But I'll tell you something. You can't BS a paramutual machine. You really can't. It's real difficult, guys. And so, if you want to do this honestly, do it under game conditions. Do it with intellectual honesty, because anything else can feed your ego, but that's all it'll feed. And I go out to the racetrack nowadays to earn a living. And so if I don't win, I don't eat. You know, it's that kind of thing. And I eat pretty good. All right, Saturday, March 28th, as you can all see. Yes, I know. Saturday, March 28th. We're on page 82. When I handicapped these races and went out to Santa Anita, up until that time, including Friday's results, which I did before I handicapped these races, the track had been running very, very mildly sustained. Mostly average pace, factor W. But on my Brohammer model, I was seeing the winners coming from the top two and three, factor W, with a slight bias towards sustained. Like a 2-2-1 or a 3-2-1 or a 3-4-3, something along those lines was what I was looking for in my sort results. And when I got there just in time to bet the first race, which I'm quite pleased with because I bet Royal Recourse to show. But I did not have Tough Enjolure as a contender. And I would be embarrassed to admit that I had ever bet on that horse. The horse had only finished one of his last three. The only positive sign in about his last six or seven races was at one place he flashed a little early speed. Now, they pulled the horse up later in that race, but he did have that tiny little flash of early speed. Well, he wired this field. That's just sort of a little alarm clock in your mind. When something totally anomalous like this happens to you, you should say, whoa, something strange. Here's a horse that has not been able to finish a race in several months, and he's wiring a field. And you look down at his past performance chart, and it says, well, maybe he has a little taste of early speed. But that's, you know, it's just one anomalous race. Came the second race. This is a maiden. I did not handicap it. But Silken Light, in its last race, had flashed early speed, had been in the lead at the second call, and then faded to fourth by 6 3/4. This time, held on, just kept right on running. Both these horses displayed another pattern, which I found kind of indicative, is that in the last 16th, last few steps going toward the wire, they just looked terrible. They were obviously laboring, very tired, and I swung my binoculars back to see who was going to catch them, and nobody was running at them. Everybody else is going very tired. And it's telling you that this track is just, that the race is being won in the first part of the race. Early pace is dominant. The third race, which I bet and lost, because I was still more or less staying with my numbers, but by now I had cut that bet way back, as I said, something's changing here, and this really confirmed it for me. Peggy D is another horse that was definitely needed front-running style, and you can see it went almost wire-to-wire, not quite, but pretty close. The fourth, another maiden. W.E. Jacks, as I recall, was a first-time starter, but it still wired the field. So we're looking at a track that has changed. Something's changed. And so right now, you know just about as much about this race course as I did. The fifth was a turf race, which has nothing to do with the rest of them. And it was won by the number one sustained horse. Now came the sixth race. And you know what I know. I'd thrown my model away. It was for whatever reason, and people asked me yesterday, why did it change? I do not know. Have no idea what was going on there. But something changed at Santa Anita and turned that from a mildly, very, very mildly sustained kind of fair track, a track that was really favoring the very even horse, into one that was just requiring a tremendous early pace bias. Suddenly didn't see horses winning with 54%. It's just that where before the earliest horses were being used up, now suddenly they were hanging on and finishing. And that was just sort of a difference. And I don't try to explain it. A lot of people get very hung up on wondering why these things happened. And it's not that important. You don't need to worry about why a thing happens so much as you need to worry about that it is happening. The Sarton methodology is the only kind of handicapping method available that allows you to pick up on these things. That first race set the alarms off, and by the third race, I was cutting my bet, and after I watched that fourth race, I had thrown away my charge, thrown away my handicapping, and was ready to take another long look at this track because something had changed. And people ask me, how long do you stay with a model? I have a guy that calls me and he loves to make little rules. You know Dennis? You know, he loves those little rules. And he says, well, I only change my model after it's gone twice. After two times it switched, then I change to the other one. And he says, sometimes they go two times, two times, two times, two times. And I said, well, that'll happen, Dennis. You know, those things happen. I change the model when reality stops fitting the model. If when a race comes along, like particularly the third race and the first, this simply doesn't make sense with the model. If my number three horse wins, well, okay, that's not much of a change. That's just maybe a handicapping error on my part. But when the track just reverses like this, and so suddenly, something happened. And I don't know what it was, and as a matter of fact, a couple people came up and talked to me about this the day after, this Sunday, in which they did not have a very good day, and I didn't have a particularly good day. The track was no longer early. It went right back to where it was. And I don't know what happened, but you don't need to know what happened. You just need to know that it did happen. And if you can be on top of these little momentary changes, I had a very good day, won almost $800 out there, and I did it all in these next three races. Well, I did win the fifth, but I didn't have a lot of faith in that race, so I didn't make a lot of money in that one. But I did it all in these next three races. And so just being alive to this opportunity, that was a very, very short opportunity. It for me, it lasted for two races, really, the sixth and the ninth, because I didn't have a very good handle on the seventh at all, and I didn't play it. In those two races, I took home an awful lot of money. And if you will be alive to opportunities like this and be ready to move when you see them, you can just, you know, print your own money out there. It's wonderful. Okay, the sixth race. Now, you all know where we're coming from and how we're handicapping. And so I guess we'll just start. Usually I start with a morning line favorite. In this case, it was Andrushka. And so let's start there. You have to start someplace. And I find I use sweeps, morning line favorite. I don't have a program the night before or anything. So I just pick sweeps favorite or the consensus favorite or some favorite and figure that's where I'll start my contender selection process. Everyone with me so far?
Yes.
Okay. Andrushka. Who makes Andrushka a contender? It's the defendants. Why is Andrushka a contender? It's not enough just to have it. You got to have a reason. Yes, sir?
Well, he ran a number one as a one by four lengths, a 1.10.2, and then he came back. It was only 4.75 lengths off, but none of them were two.
Well, you can be a little more obvious on that. This horse just ran at this class level, at this track, at this distance, about, just a couple weeks ago, was beaten by a nose. Is this a contender? Yeah, we're talking, it lost that race, this very same race, by this much. That makes it a contender, guys. Truly. A nose is not very much. If you see the photos, I mean, a head's this, a nose is this. Horses do have big noses, but it's, okay, and let's just go from here. So Andrushka is what we sort of have to, that's our benchmark. Remember on the matchup? We're going to keep going back to the benchmark. Andrushka is our favorite. And so we're going to compare these other horses to Andrushka. The reason I start here, because I want to have something to beat. I want to see a standard. If Andrushka is to be, you know, if the winner of this race, if it's a horse other than Andrushka, must beat Andrushka. And so we're going to match them up against it. So let's start with Veronica's Quest. How many of you make Veronica a contender?